Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
Jim will explain why the Velvet Underground wouldn't exist without REM.
Or vice versa. Hey, Patrick.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, Mark.
Hello.
So, let's listen to some more Velvet Underground.
About it.
What do you think?
Yeah. Got the album queued up here.
Okay. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
With us is Mark Jenkins. We are going track by track on the Velvet Underground's debut album, The Velvet Underground and Nico, because it was released 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm. It's like our vintage.
And before we get into the next two songs, Patrick, when did you become familiar with the Velvet Underground and this record in particular?
In 1984, I was in high school at the time, and these first four, you know, classic Velvet Underground albums were reissued on vinyl, and along with a set of rarities called VU, and I bought all five of those records with my Sam Goody discount, and that's where I heard it about it. You know, I had read about him in sort of like the Rolling Stone record guide and places, but that's when I really finally had a chance to get them all and sit down and listen to them as they were originally sort of intended.
I know that you have tossed out a line every once in a while in the past that you say the Velvet Underground invented music.
Sometimes I do.
Yeah. So what do you mean by that?
I don't know. To me, that, you know, they're the first band that kind of broke through the sterility, and the first one to me that exhibited kind of all the characteristics of punk rock, you know, that I would go back to. But I also think even at that point I had read about bands who had even referenced the Velvet Underground as sort of like, you know, the godhead of all music. And you know, partly that's the way I grew up falling in love with records, was I heard other people talk about how great it was. And then I sort of built that up in my mind and then went back and listened to it. And it not only confirmed what I thought, but it went a little bit beyond that. And I just never thought it would be kind of so raw and so original and so lo-fi, yet so rewarding.
So Velvet Underground is sort of your Beatles, right?
Probably, yeah. They're definitely more Beatles than the Beatles for me.
Okay. Okay. And Mark, when did you discover the Velvet Underground?
In early 1969, they started doing alternative rock every night on WHFS. And sometime after that, I heard two songs from this album, one of which we played, I'm Waiting for the Man, the other one is Heroin. To my best of my knowledge, I never played any of the songs off the album.
Wow.
They did play Loaded when that came out, but I don't remember hearing any of the songs from the two intermediate albums. And I would guess sometime in 1970 or so, I actually saw a copy in a record store and bought it. And that's when I heard the other songs.
For me, this is a good segue into this next song we're going to play. I mean, I got to be honest, I discovered the Velvet Underground through REM.
Okay.
So, I kind of sort of knew about Lou Reed and had definitely heard Walk on the Wild Side, but beyond that, Didn't really know much of anything. I do remember when that box set you mentioned came out, because that really got a lot of press sort of in the, you know, the alternative and college rock sort of scene at the time. But that was right around the time that, maybe it was a little bit before, but it was right around the time that REM Dead Letter Office album came out that had three Velvet Underground covers on it. And those covers had been released as B-sides on some of their singles before then.
Yep.
But that was really it. It was sort of like, I love REM. This is great. They obviously love Velvet Underground, so I got to go check those out and buy those records. And this was one of the songs that they covered.
It's not hard to realize she does to please. She's just a little tease. See the way she walks, hear the way she talks. You're written in her book. Your number.
I think probably at the time you mentioned, I might have preferred Michael Stipe's voice to Nico, although I've grown to quite like it. But Mark, I wanted to ask you, can you give us some insight into how Nico got paired up with the Velvet Underground, and you know, was Lou specifically assigned to write songs either about her or for her by Andy Warhol? Because, you know, I've always understood that he was the one that orchestrated the whole thing.
Well, definitely Warhol's the one who brought her into the group for the short time that she was there.
Yeah.
I don't know if assigned is quite the word, but there are a number of songs in Lou Reed's catalog that supposedly came from Warhol's suggestion, mm-hmm. Famous one being Vicious, but also this one, which is supposedly about Edie Sedgwick and supposedly was written at Warhol's suggestion. But Lou wrote a lot of songs about the factory and its inhabitants.
Yeah.
It's a weird little world that he knew very well. And of course, Walk on the Wild Side is another one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting, you've got this icy Teutonic voice. You think, well, it's a song about her, but it's not. But it is very much a Warhol scene song being sung by a Warhol scenester. And, you know, apparently Andy was, you know, a good Catholic and went to church every Sunday, but he liked to see people destroy each other and to see people destroy themselves.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's notorious for indulging and encouraging people like Edie Sedgwick, who were fairly self-destructive, and, you know, encouraging lore about them. The other thing I think is interesting about hearing Nico with the Velvet Underground is this is very much a Long Island rock and roll band, mm-hmm. With this very strange European accent. And it partly comes from Cale, but it also partly comes from Nico. You've got the Welshman and the German woman, and then you've got the three kids from Long Island, who are very much rooted in, you know, Motown and garage rock and so forth. And so, you know, one of the ways that this record shoots off these strange sparks is by putting those two things together.
Yeah. It's a great observation. I think that this song always kind of confused me at first, too, because, you know, like Mark said, it was Nico singing about a she, but it wasn't necessarily autobiographical, but it was confusing to, like, you know, who is she and what is she doing and why are you singing about her, you know, kind of in this detached way and you know, this very cold, you know, in some ways very cold kind of way.
It is. You mentioned the vocals on Femme Fatale and the other songs that Nico sings. It mm-hmm. just, it's a little bit, when you first hear it, it's a little bit off-putting, right? It's not what your ear expects. You're expecting the song to be more this sort of like ingenue sort of style of singing, right? And it has this, partly I think because she's German and she's singing in English, it has this very sort of deliberate sort of vocal style to mm-hmm. it. And it just puts this weird kind of twist on it that makes it just different and kind of fascinating, right?
Yeah. And then, you know, later when you start reading about, you know, Nico and maybe Lou had an affair with her, and John Cale maybe too for a few weeks, and it was really hard to tell what was happening. And so you start to cast all these emotions back on the song, and which is a great song. And you know, there's Sunday Morning, which is kind of, you know, lovely and gentle, and then I'm Waiting for the Man, and then suddenly there's another one that's kind of lovely and placid and gentle, and so you kind of have no idea what's going on. And then, you know, when the next song starts, it gets even more confusing.
All right, so let's get into that next song. Are we ready for that?
I think
so. All right,
so
we'll do that right after this break. Hey, Patrick, one of the things I really need in life is validation.
Sure, I can relate to that, Jim.
So please, if you like Rock in the Suburbs,
yeah,
you listen on iTunes,
yeah,
please, you know, give us a rating and a review. It's really easy to do. You've done that, I think, before, right? I've
done it pretty easy. You log in, you rate, you subscribe, and you review.
Right. So those ratings that people give, they're like up to 5 stars.
5 stars.
There might be an option for our show to go higher than that.
5 stars.
And then
5 stars.
A review, you could actually like write a little thing about how much you like the show.
5 stars.
And what that does is it sort of like elevates the profile of the show, and then other people
5 stars
discover it. And
5 stars.
That's good for the show and keeps us going.
5 stars.
Right?
So 5 stars.
What should people do?
5 stars.
And how do they do that?
iTunes. Rate. Review. 5 stars.
Yeah. Please do that. Rock in the Suburbs.
5 stars.
What is that?
Yeah. that track, so Venus and Furs,
yep.
To me, it really marks the first time on this record that you hear the viola of John Cale. Right, Mark? It just sort of is very stark and in there.
Right. And that comes out of the Theater of Eternal Music, where they were all playing guitar stringed with violins or violas. Cale used to say that the intent was to try to sound like an aircraft engine. They would play these long drones in unison, and here it's sort of channeled into a song, not a very conventional song, but yeah. it is a song. And of course the text comes out of a fairly famous S&M book that Lou read. A couple of these books around. There's also a book called The Velvet Underground,
yeah.
which is the name of where the name of the band came from.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, Lou liked the matter-of-fact documentation of the world he lived in, but he also liked to shock people.
Yeah.
And so that's what this song is attempting to do. And it's actually a little bit of program music in the sense that the viola sounds a bit like a whip.
Yeah.
So
it really does. Yeah.
You know, so this isn't just a sonic effect. It's actually illustrating the lyrics.
Mm-hmm. The way it drops in between the tambourine and literally the 2 drum beats that Maureen Tucker plays in the whole song, right? It really is in there kind of cracking. And again, you know, at a time when, you know, Sgt. Pepper was about to be the, you know, heyday of music, right? And it was all about peace and love and
right.
sort of, you know, harmony and exploring everything. Here was a, as Mark said, a very matter-of-fact exploration of somebody who gains their pleasure through pain,
right?
Right, Bleed For Me, you know, was not something that was harmonious at the time of, you know, music, right? And where the sort of the zeitgeist was going.
Right, and this was you know, the same period of the term that nobody liked, Raga Rock, in which you had actually George Harrison trying to teach himself how to sitar. Yes. And you also had Roger McGuinn trying to sound like a sitar without the bother of actually learning how to play the sitar. And you had the Yardbirds also experimenting with sitar techniques. And all those people are using it sort of in a different way than the Velvets do. The Velvets music has a real trance quality to it.
Right, yeah.
That you can see. And the trance music obviously was something that was interesting a lot of people. Brian Jones went off to Morocco to record trance music, you know, a year after this. But there's a sense of stasis in this music that's very un-rock and roll and very much not in the tradition of soul and blues.
Yeah.
But yet it still has a hummable melody, you know?
Well, it kind of does.
And
yeah.
I think that goes to Lou Reed. Like, he still knew how to write, like, songs, you know, within that. So it does. That song will stay in your head later on, right?
Yeah. And, you know, it's always been interesting to me that as someone who tried to play around in bands and, you know, tried to write songs without really knowing how to play very well, that all these songs were these weird different lengths, but they were all tailored to just about the length they needed. You know, they were not all 2 minutes 50 and they weren't all 6 or 7 minutes, but they just lasted as long as they needed to last, and then they were kind of done. And that, you know, that's this song, Venus and Furs, really reminds me of that. It just tells the story, and when the story's over, the song's over, right? And they just did it as long as they needed to do it. And that always made an impression on me as someone who was trying to create something. You just sort of needed it to do it as long as you felt like it needed to be done, and then you could stop. And, you know, that may have led me and the people I played with to writing 1 minute and 40 second songs, but it was very freeing, you know?
All right, so stick around tomorrow and the rest of the week. We're going to go through more of the tracks on the Velvet Underground and Eco. And where you can find that, of course, is at Rock in the Suburbs on iTunes or Audio Boom or Stitcher or TuneIn. You can also find us at suburbspod.com. You can also email the show there, rock@suburbspod.com. You can find us on social media, Facebook and Twitter, also at suburbspod. And we'd really love to hear from you. And if you want, you can please call our Suburban Party line. That number is 612-440-1984.
You just go to the payphone at the end of the street, put a quarter in there, and call us up.
That's right. Call your dealer, then then call us. Okay. Right. This is Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I am Patrick Foster.
And I'm special guest Mark Jenkins.
Thank you, Mark. And we will talk to you tomorrow.
Sterility,